You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
Roto Experts in the Morning with your hosts, Mike Blewett and George Kurtz. Now, here's Mike and George.
Welcome back for hour number two. The dramatic music plays us on, George, in hour number two. We'll take a little bit of a break from MLB to go around the sports world. Going to talk a little bit of football here in a minute, but a couple of interesting stories. I forgot to mention them from the top. George, I know you're not a big college basketball fan, but last night the final undefeated team went down. Kind of a stunning loss for Gonzaga, the number one team in the country. They were 29-0. And it turns out, according to Darren Rovell on Twitter, that they had printed up for their fans 7,000 copies of like a new, one of those newspaper wraparounds that said 30-0 on it with a celebratory picture. And they lost that game. They lost that 30th game. So they are 29-1. They will not get to 30-0, and there will not be an undefeated champion for the 41st consecutive season. So a little bit of a blunder there. I guess you can't call it a blunder. You got to be prepared for that kind of stuff, but maybe a little bit of a jinx in play.
Oops.
Yep. Exactly. That's exactly what Darren Rovell's tweet said. Whoops. He retweeted somebody else. So that's the deal. They were 25.5 point favorites last night, and they lost. So there you go. I will be actually at a couple of college basketball tournaments coming up. The Atlantic 10, the Big 10, the ACC might make my way, might make those rounds, might get to the NCAA tournament, might get to the Final Four if things go according to plan. So I get kind of excited about that. And I know you're not much of a fan, but do you at all get swept up in March Madness, at least? The excitement of the buzzer beaters, the last second shots, all that kind of stuff, the upsets?
No, don't care.
Come on. Not even March Madness?
Nope, don't care.
Wow. Well, you're wrapped up in hockey. I guess you gotta do that. There's a lot of hockey to watch.
Hockey, the Final Four is on opening weekend for baseball. It's annoying, actually.
Yeah, I mean, that's actually a great week of sports because you have opening day, you have the Final Four. You go from the Final Four right into the Masters. You got the par three competition on Wednesday. I know you're not a big golf guy, but do you watch any of the Masters?
No, I do like to play golf though.
George.
I'm not,
you do. That's what I'm surprised about. You get out there on the links a little bit. You don't watch you don't watch any of the bigger tournaments, the majors.
No, I've been to a couple of U.S. Opens, though, the ones that were on Long Island. I've been to them, but I'm not going to watch on TV.
I went to the one in Shinnecock back in, like, 2004 or whatever it was. That was a lot of fun. I had a lot of fun walking the course. It was super hot that whole weekend, but I had a lot of fun, more fun than I expected to have at a golf tournament. It's fun. And they keep – you know what they do smart, too, with the U.S. Open is, like, they keep the prices down as opposed to the U.S. Open tennis tournament in Queens. Where everybody complains about how expensive everything is, and it's like, you know, $9 waters and all that kind of stuff, you find that it's not the case at the U.S. Open. They keep, like, the sandwiches, the drinks, very affordable, so people don't feel like they're getting fleeced when they're out on the golf course.
I've never been to the U.S. Open in Queens. I wouldn't mind going. I think that'd be kind of interesting.
Yeah.
But
I played a lot of tennis growing up, so you know, it's something that I've done in the past, and I would encourage you to go. It's a fun event, but certainly a lot different than the U.S. Open golf tournament, which I found to be a lot more fun. In any event, a couple of stories or a couple of things I was listening to last night as well. The never-ending quarterback carousel is upon us. We talked a little bit about it yesterday. But even some things related to the everyday business of quarterbacks occurred really in Jacksonville, where Tom Coughlin basically came in and said, for lack, you know, to paraphrase it, Bortles has to be a lot better. He's not guaranteed any starts here because we need to be better all around. He desires more toughness from the Jags, and it's something that he's going to demand from Bortles. And a stat that I heard last night listening to another radio program was that Bortles has 11 wins in his career. and he has the same number of pick sixes in his career, 11 and 11. So really, it's just kind of indicative of how things are gone. And I just would like to get your thoughts on Bortles next year. I've called him, nicknamed him the fantasy magician because he doesn't play particularly well, but either because they're trailing or because he manages to get the ball in the end zone a couple of times a game, he ends up being like a top 15 to 12 quarterback each and every week. I think he finished the season maybe 13th, or no, higher than that. It was like 9th by the end of the year. So your thoughts on Bortles, and is this Coughlin just trying to motivate him, or do you really think that they could move in a different direction since this is kind of the last year of his rookie contract?
Well, you know, you never know what Coughlin's thinking here. He has been brought in there really to kick some butt, right, to get this organization headed in the right direction. I know many people, including me, thought they were going to play better last season. That didn't work out. That division's only getting tougher now. You know, Houston looks like if they make the right move at quarterback, they could be a dominant team. You know, Indianapolis can score some points. Tennessee's heading in the right direction at Mariota. Jacksonville doesn't want to be left behind. You know, and right now they have to worry about it. They have talent all around here. That Bortles needs to bring that talent together. That stat you brought up about 11 touchdown passes and 11 pick sixes, not good. You know, we know he has things to fix. I think fantasy owners, they'll look at those stats you just brought up. Oh, he finished top 10 fantasy. Think he's fine. No, he's awful. He's a fine fantasy quarterback. He's a horrible right now NFL quarterback, and that needs to be fixed. Do I think they might bring in somebody who can push him? Sure. More than Chad Henne can, you know, check down Chad. I think that could happen. You know, whether it's going to be a fourth, fifth-round pick, I don't think they're going to spend a first-round pick on a quarterback, probably not even a second-round pick. But do I think they could draft another rookie fourth, fifth round? Sure. Maybe sign a veteran? You know, sure, I could see that. You know, I don't think it'll be Jay Cutler, but a Jay Cutler type, you know, someone who started in the league who could push him a little bit, I could see that. But I think Bortles gets one more year.
So Bortles actually finished 8th in ESPN standard fantasy leagues, the rankings I'm going to be looking at right now, just in front of Derek Carr, where obviously if Carr stayed healthy, he would have jumped over him, and right behind Matt Stafford, who started the fantasy year like gangbusters, cooled off down the stretch. But in any event, Matt Stafford had a pretty good fantasy season. So Bortles, look, I wasn't buying the Jags last year. I know you were, and we disagreed on that point, but even I didn't think that it was going to be the dumpster fire that it ended up being. But it was apparent pretty quickly, right? It was kind of a no doubter. When the coach goes 3-13, it doesn't matter how much they liked him. That 3-13 gets everybody in the building pushed out. Although, the GM manages to stick in there, and he has Tom Coughlin now overseeing him. So, reality is, we're going to see how this works moving forward with Doug Marrone. I think Tom Coughlin, because he has some familiarity in the organization there, he obviously holds a lot of clout. I think Shad Khan is going to listen to him as much as he can. And what I wonder is if Coughlin – look, we know how he is, George. I've been around and I've seen this guy, and you have, for a really long time. You almost get the impression that if things go south in like the first month, he's going to want to grab the headset and go down on the sidelines, right?
I'm sure he will, but I think Doug Marrone's going to get longer than that.
Yeah.
You know, I think the problem last year was I wasn't the only person who thought they were going to do well. So did the organization. You know, so did the owner. So when they imploded, you said dumpster fire, perfect term for it. Someone had to pay the price. And, you know, and it was we were caught with Gus Bradley's head in what? November? October? Halloween? You know, it was a matter of time until he was going to go. So they're starting from scratch again. Do I think Tom Coughlin's going to want to come down? Sure. Of course, I think he is that kind of controlling freak, hard to lose that. He's been a coach forever. And including with the Jaguars. But I think Marrone will get his shot. You know, Marrone was good in Buffalo. He just overplayed his hand there. That's why he wasn't there anymore. So I think he'll be fine. But that being said, I think this team, this organization still feels like they have talent, that they have stuff to prove. But I'll say it again. It's quarterback league. Bortles plays well, they'll do well. He doesn't, they won't.
Yeah. It is an interesting team with the with the amount of money they put into free agency on the defensive side of the ball, and frankly, the draft picks that they put into the defensive side of the ball, they are a team that can kind of improve things pretty rapidly. They're not in the toughest of divisions, but it is fair to state that they are the worst team in that division. With the Colts, we were talking about it all preseason last year, George, how the Colts, how bad their defense was and how bad it was going to be. We had their beat reporter on. Do you remember that? And she was basically laughing at how bad the defense was and how bad that they could be. And with all of that, they ended up 8-8. It got the GM fired, but they did go 8-8. One game off the pace of that division with a Houston-led team that is still looking for a quarterback despite dropping $72 million on one at 9-7, and Tennessee at 9-7, who their quarterback gets hurt at the end of the year, and it's entirely possible that they could have gotten that 10th win had he stayed healthy. So with all that being said, it's not the best division in the world, but I think those other teams are still in front of the Jags right now.
I would agree. It's hard to disagree right now. Once again, we have a whole offseason to see what these teams do. But, you know, I think Houston's the class right now. I think if Houston, I'll say it again, I think if they were to get Romo, I think they're the second-best team in the AFC behind New England. You know, I think that solves pretty much all their problems. Not that they're a great team or a dynasty team or anything like that, but where's their weakness? You know, secondary, I guess you would look at secondary. Maybe look at Shaw, make some moves to shore that up. But the running game is there. Offensive line's there. Receivers are there. Could it all be better? Sure. It could always be better. But it's there. They have it. You know, so J.J. Watt will be back. The team has played fantastic without him last year. You know, this is a team that's been winning despite the quarterback for years, right? Just don't lose the game for us. You know, well, defense will keep you in. We'll win 20-17. But Romo, you know, you can get up those points. You know, they could be an interesting team here. So I think Houston is number one there. Indianapolis with Andrew Luck is always going to be a danger. We know they can score points. They need to make moves on defense to, you know, shore this up. And my God, can you protect Luck? Right now it's pretty much you and I playing offensive line there. And, you know, defenders are just licking their lips and teeing off on Luck. Can't have that happen to you, to your franchise quarterback like that. Tennessee with Mariota, certainly on their way up. Defense is good. Can Mariota play a full season? Stop getting hurt? You know, he said back-to-back injuries that have ended his season might have made the playoffs this year if he stayed healthy. He didn't. That went away. Strong running game with Murray and Henry there. So you got to like where they're at. So it leaves Jacksonville. It just leaves Jacksonville. And they have talent there. I mean, you look at this roster, there's talent all over the place. You know, but I'll say it again. It all comes down to the quarterback. You know, the quarterback's playing well. Not he's their only problem. They have some other weaknesses. But if he comes around, that can mask the other problems.
Yeah, I mean, they drafted some talented players on the defensive side of the ball, so ultimately we're going to have to see how those guys come along, Miles Jack and Jalen Ramsey and all those guys. We're going to see how they come along. But they obviously traded Julius Thomas. I'm reading a story from a couple of days ago where they grew tired just 2 years into a 5-year contract. They became tired of his non-existent blocking. If he was on the field and he was a second tight end and that meant a receiver came off the field, the team speed went down. And if he was on the field with Robinson, Hearns, and Lee, it was a clear giveaway to defenses that it was a pass or a run away from him because he couldn't be at the point of attack. So I think that's part of it. Julius Thomas not bought in. He had the one breakout year in Denver with Peyton Manning, and it hasn't resembled anything like that since. So Adam Gase, the head coach in Miami, previously coached Thomas in Denver. He thinks he can make it work with a tight end who is a liability on running plays. So we'll see how that continues to play out with the Jags. I'll talk about a few more things related to the NFL after the break. Welcome back to Roto Experts in the Morning. Mike and George here till 10. And as I mentioned earlier in the show, the 2017 MLB Exclusive Edge Fantasy Baseball Package is out. Get your full season fantasy baseball package for one low price of $29.95, beginning with our Deluxe Draft Package. It is your full season ticket to championship insights and advice, and it all begins with our comprehensive draft package available now. and continuing throughout the regular season, guiding your run to a league title. You'll get completely sortable player projections and profiles for over 800 players, featuring our award-winning team of FSWA honorees and Hall of Famers, plus Fantasy Pros accuracy rankings, standouts, an improved cheat sheet tool, an auction value generator, and a complete suite of in-depth articles and rankings for all styles of play, including Roto and Head-to-Head and exclusive insider reports from around the majors. So go to rotoexperts.com and get your 2017 MLB Exclusive Edge Fantasy Baseball Package now. George is the closer report guy. He will continue to update that both this spring and throughout the season. And George and I have talked about that quite a bit. We'll continue to hit on closers and those potential closers throughout the spring. So, George, one other note. I mean, it's kind of a local note, but really indicative of what the team is going through, and it's local to us. But the New York Jets released Nick Mangold, 11 seasons with the team. He was a first-round draft pick, was really a standout center in the league and for the Jets for a long period of time, was a team leader. So it always is interesting to me when they move on from kind of a team leader, and Nick Mangold was certainly that for the Jets.
He was, I mean, listen, it's salary cap age. He could still play. He's not done. But they needed to save some cap. They have a replacement already on the team, so I guess I get why they did it. You know, so I don't have an issue with it. I think if Mangold wants to continue playing, he'll find another team. It's an offensive line. A lot of teams need offensive line help. So I think it'll be strictly up to him. Maybe after 11 years, always in New York, New Jersey, whatever you want to consider the Jets, maybe he's done. Maybe he'll pack it up. Maybe he wants to go see if he can get a winning team. Like I said, plenty of teams need offensive line help center. So I think if he wants to play, he can. I don't think he's done.
It's the single most challenged position in football, or position group in football, right? Offensive line. Teams always struggle with it. You hear a variety of different reasons for that, but mainly coaches will complain that there isn't really enough practice time for them, and offensive linemen have a hard time being cohesive and staying together on the same team and learning schemes. I mean, I think we've seen over time that as talented as your offensive lines are, a huge factor in your overall success is, while individual talent is extremely important, the cohesion of the offensive line is as important, right? Dallas happens to have a little bit of both right now, or a lot of both right now, which is why they're so dominant, because they have several talented players, first-round draft picks on the line, plus they've been together for a while now, and it's why you see them as effective as they are.
Exactly. I mean, offensive line throughout the NFL is an issue. And we don't like that because, you know, once we want to see points put up on the board. How do you put points up on the board? Offensive line, protect the quarterback, give him time to throw, find those receivers deep down the field. And we know several teams don't have that. You know, so, yes, it's an issue. I think you put the reasons right. The offensive line needs cohesion, needs to play together for years. And we don't have that in today's era. It's hard to get anyone to play together for years. You know, you can only really sign a select few guys to long-term contracts. You know, the Cowboys did get, I don't want to say lucky because they drafted all these guys, but they're also signing them all. Jerry Jones has figured out the value of where it lies. Other teams will follow suit. But still, everything has to go right. You have to have those picks where it makes sense to draft an offensive lineman. You have to be willing to pull the trigger on that, the non-sexy pick in the first round. You know, and you know, whether it's a guard, tackle, whatever it might be, you know, that's not something you really sell to fans. You know, there's no skill position, there's no quarterback, no wide receiver, no pass rusher. You know, no big-time running back, not even a cornerback, a guy you could sell as a shutdown guy. So it can be tough, especially if you're going to do this for multiple seasons.
Yeah, and I remember back, George, like the last time the Steelers won the Super Bowl in 2008, I remember that whole season. I remember thinking that this is a really good team. The defense is nasty, but I don't know that the offensive line is going to hold up, and I don't know that they're going to be good enough because I didn't think they were great. They had a few good players on there, but nobody was great. But what was good is that they stayed mostly healthy and they had been together for a while, so they were able to get the job done through the playoffs. And I remember thinking that about those Giants teams that won those Super Bowls. None of those guys are going to the Hall of Fame. They had some good players on there, but they were together for a long time, and they made, I think they had the record string of starts together as a five-man unit. So I always think back to those types of teams, and it's what you see with Dallas now. You know, Dallas, obviously they're on the precipice here, of being really good yet again for the 2017 season, you would think that they'll continue some of that momentum. Obviously, things can swing wildly from year to year, but that Dallas offensive line is a unit that certainly gets them off on the right foot. You know, going back to the Jets for a second, though, if I had told you a year ago, if we were sitting here a year ago talking about the Jets, and I would have told you, yeah, by the way, after this upcoming season, and heck, even if I told you this in the summer, after the season, the Jets are going to blow it up and be rebuilding. Would you have thought that I was crazy, or would you have thought that that was a possibility?
I would have thought it was a possibility, mainly because of the quarterback situation. You know, they don't have one. Yeah, so that wouldn't have shocked me at all. The fact that it's come where it seems to be a smart thing to do, that's a little surprising. I mean, excuse me, Fitzpatrick is gone, right? Geno Smith, probably not the answer. Maybe even more than likely not the answer. Maybe definitely not the answer. Hackenberg didn't look very good. Bryce Petty, certainly not the answer. Hell, that offensive line played like they hated Bryce Petty. You know, they were trying to get him killed at the end of the year. That was the strangest thing. He took some of the hardest hits I've ever seen. That game was with Miami where they just didn't block Sue and Wake. What are you trying to send there? I don't know what was going on. That one seemed like a code red. You know, but you're just trying to get even for something. Strange. A running back seems to be okay with Forte and Powell. Marshall had a lot of locker room dissent there. I think his mouth finally caught up with him. People saying pretty much saying, shut up! You know, and plus he didn't have a good season. Eric Decker missed half the season due to an injury. So they have some issues there. Don't really have a tight end. You have a defense is not what it was. It's still solid. So they have the defensive line. But we know they have some issues there. With players who may not be on the team for long. So, if they wanted to blow it up, I wouldn't blame them. But the only problem is this. If they had a good quarterback, they could probably be a decent team. They could probably keep Marshall. They could probably make everybody happy. The defense is good enough where it's not awful. I think it's still actually a tick above average when everyone's healthy and playing. You know, I think they should probably move on from Darrelle Revis, save that cap room, move on. He's got his own legal issues anyway. And you try and find another cornerback. It's easier said than done. You know, they have a top draft pick again, so maybe that can be worked there. But the biggest question for the Jets, by far, quarterback. Again, it always comes down to the quarterback. What are they going to do?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I think they're going to piece it together for a year and maybe try to draft. Here's what I've said in the past about them. I can't believe that they have two developmental quarterbacks and they can't figure out if either of them are worth anything. I mean, they did draft Hackenberg in the second round.
Right, and what does that say about him if you draft the quarterback first round this year? Or second round, for that matter? Are you giving up on him already?
Yeah, and it also, by the way, 2 years ago, I thought the McCagnon-Todd Bowles duo was the right one. I was like, these guys are on the same page. I kind of like the way that they're going about the team. And in their first year, you know, they don't blow that game, week 17 game. They're in the playoffs, and things would have been looking pretty good for them. But a year later, and you're scratching your head as to what the heck are these guys doing. They drafted a quarterback in the second round that first of all, there's leaks all over that building, and leaks are coming out. They're not even sure that Hackenberg can play yet. Okay, still a developmental guy, but why did you reach for him in the second round then? Did you really think somebody was going to scoop up a guy that couldn't play until his third season? Seems unlikely. So I think they mischaracterized that, or they're not doing a good job of developing him while he's in the building. Now they've let Mangold go. It looks like they're going to re-sign David Harris. There's been talk about Sheldon Richardson moving on, or them moving on from Sheldon Richardson. But if Revis goes, and you have these other players going out the door, shouldn't you make an effort to keep somebody as talented as Sheldon Richardson? Yes, there's been off-the-field stuff and possibly even some locker room unrest, but they paid Muhammad Wilkerson. They have Leonard Williams there. I would think adding another sort of interior edge rusher like Richardson can be a huge positive for them, especially if they're moving on from some other players. You got some young guys in the secondary there. I don't know. Yeah, I don't know what they have planned. It does play into the thing I was going to mention next, is that the salary cap, after years, several projections have emerged about where the 2017 NFL salary cap will end up after years of rapid growth. and the latest figure represents a double-digit spike from 2016, George. So the latest range projection has the figure settling in between 166 and 169 million. That's according to Mike Florio of Pro Football Talk. So it's near $170 million. So we shall see how it ends up, but that's a quite a big increase from the 2015 cap, which is 143. It could be jumping up to nearly 170 when the league year opens up.
Yeah, I think I've heard 168 is where it's at. Either way, you're talking about a nice increase here. So the money's there. I mean, but then again, you know, the quarterback's going to get a huge percentage of that increase. It's the way, once again, it works in the NFL. So, you know, I think last year during the draft, I think the Cowboys actually screwed a lot of teams up. Everybody knew Dallas was looking for a quarterback, so we saw Denver jump ahead of him in the first round, you know, and grab their quarterback. Oakland jumped ahead of him, I think, in the third round to get Connor Cook. And, you know, when I think of the Jets, maybe the same thing with Hackenberg in the second round. Maybe they had to jump to get him because they were worried about Dallas taking him in top of three. You know, and so, you know, I just think it always has a domino effect. The team's always wondering what other teams are going to do. And I really don't blame the Jets for taking Hackenberg. Even if they knew he was going to be a developmental guy, don't blame him. Listen, in this league, you need to draft a quarterback. The Green Bay Packers, for a while, used to draft the quarterback almost every other year. They always believed in having one in the pipeline, just in case. You develop him. If he works out, great. You can always deal him. What we're seeing now with Jimmy Garoppolo in New England, he doesn't work out, fine. Okay, granted, you don't want to say it's a wasted draft pick, but it didn't work out. A lot of other draft picks aren't going to work out either. Quarterback is the most important position. Shouldn't you be almost always working to develop one? You know, it's a little different if you know you have a Hall of Famer. You know,
completely.
Right.
Completely. You should always be doing that.
Right. The Packers now with A-Rod, fine. You know, 5 years ago, the New England with Brady, fine if you didn't want to take one. But other than that, you should always be working to develop this position. We've seen what happens when you don't have a quarterback. Your franchise can go into the tank for a long time.
Yeah, and George, another to dovetail into another point related to that is that I think another issue that teams have is that they don't necessarily have someone in the building that's any good at doing this. I've heard a lot of NFL analysts, they're almost all former quarterbacks that say this, but they are consistently frustrated at the inability of teams to develop young quarterbacks. So it's one thing to draft somebody like Hackenberg, which I do think is I think it's an appropriate risk, as you're saying. I think it's important to have somebody in the building that you're continuing to develop. What happens, you know, we've said this a number of times. If Ben Roethlisberger goes down, the Steelers' season is over. If Eli goes down in New York, the season is immediately over. The guys behind them aren't quality NFL players. So the Steelers, I hear them already talking about, we got to move on from Landry Jones and find another guy for when we're handing off the torch or in case Ben gets hurt. So it is a problem that they don't necessarily have guys in the building that can develop them too. Now, you take the case of the Steelers. I do trust Todd Haley to do that. I think they've just decided that maybe Landry Jones isn't really good enough to potentially have the torch passed to him if and when Ben retires. And it's just really a matter of time at this point. But you know, it's a double-edged sword in that sense. How early do you take the guy, and do we have anybody in the building that can do it? The consistent criticism you heard in L.A. is that they didn't have anybody that was doing the job with Jared Goff.
Yeah, I mean, it's almost a luxury in this day and age to have a competent backup, especially on a contending team. You know, listen, New England, they developed Garoppolo. Cowboys got lucky with Dak Prescott. I don't think there's any doubt about that, to have Romo as your backup. Most teams aren't going to have that. You could look at other teams. You know, Simeon and Paxton Lynch in Denver. It's just, you know, they don't know which one of those guys is going to work out. Osweiler and Tom Savage in Houston, same situation here. You know, Indianapolis isn't. Can anybody even name the backup quarterback in Indianapolis offhand? Anyone? Not easy.
It's not Curtis Painter, is it?
Oh, God, I hope not. I don't know who it is offhand. I'm really hoping it's not still Curtis Painter. You mentioned Landry Jones. Ben Roethlisberger goes down there, done. Eli Manning goes down for the Giants, they're done. You know, Kirk Cousins and Colt McCoy, I don't care what Corey Parsons thinks. They're not going to be the same team. You know, you can go on and on with these teams. With the backup in Green Bay, you know, with the tolls line or something like that, who cares? Not going to get the job done. You know, Drew Brees
in New Orleans. Oh, I think that is the Colts. You hit him. That's the Colts guy.
Now. Oh, okay.
So. That's who's behind Luck. So you hit on it eventually. Scott Tolzien is the backup in Indianapolis.
Sooner or later you'll get it. But that's, I mean, it just shows you. You know, most teams, I mean, Atlanta has Matt Schaub. So they have a solid veteran backup. You'll get, every now and then you'll get a good team here, but most teams, I think they assume, and I don't think this is the wrong assumption, by the way. Listen, the starter goes down and my season's done anyway. I'm not going to spend a lot of money on a backup. I'd rather have, you know, more of that money put towards a defensive lineman or offensive line, whatever it might be. And I get that because those positions are more likely to get hurt. So I understand that kind of thinking. Plus, you know, as Scott Engel loves to tell you, there just aren't enough good starting quarterbacks to go around.
There aren't. It is the number one reason why. You know what? Let's take a break here. I want to continue this. We'll talk a little bit about the lack of quarterback depth after the break. Mike and George after this. Mike and George here till 10 o'clock. Coming up after our show, we have Fantasy Bagels and Baseball with Tony Zincata and Cha-Cha. We have Fan Rag. That's from 10 to 12. Then you have Fan Rag Fantasy Baseball with Al Melchior. The producers, our very own Pete Considori, Chris Bavona, and Don Burns. Chris, is Don actually going to show up this week? Or Pete, is Don actually going to show up this week?
No, sorry. We thought he was, but I think next week might be his premiere.
Interesting. His
what
debut.
A diva.
I know.
Yeah, he's building, he's trying to build momentum or build intrigue into his virgin appearance on the producer's show. So what
he's
do you guys have lined up for today?
We have a good show lined up. We have a Daytona 500 preview. We'll have Scott Engel on for that. We're going to be going into a little NHL as well as going into
Daytona 500's today?
We're just doing a preview of it. I don't think it's today.
Okay. All right. I'm just making sure.
And then we're going to go over the Greatest of All Time TV spot that Dane from Shot Callers has been doing. So we have a lot of stuff planned.
Wait, explain this to me. I haven't heard it yet.
Oh, okay. So Dane Martinez, Speed's Spittin' Statistician, as they like to call him on the show, on Shot Callers, has been running a bracket for the Greatest of All Time TV shows. And each there's four categories. There's reality, animation, reality, animation, drama, and I believe comedy.
Comedy, yeah.
Yes. So there's a bracket almost like the March Madness, and we had some play-in votes on our show, and now the bracket's starting to winding down, and they're doing it all over polls that you can find on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network Twitter.
There you go, and you can catch us at FNTSY Radio if you want to participate in any of those polls. We haven't had any polls today. I haven't found anything worthy of making a poll about. George, have you seen any of these brackets at all on this Best of All Time TV show?
I did. I think the comedy was, I know Cheers is one of them versus MASH, I believe it was. I saw that bracket.
MASH?
Yeah.
How old are the people voting on this? I know MASH is a historically significant television show, but usually in polls like this, in brackets like this, it skews towards the contemporary. So I would think Seinfeld would be in there, but Cheers and MASH, those are like...
Well, I think that could be one bracket. I didn't check out every bracket. That's one of the ones I saw on Twitter. Law and Order was up against, I forget what it was, but Law and Order was winning. MASH was losing, by the way. I think it was almost 3-1 they were losing.
Were you a Law and Order guy? Did you watch that show?
Yeah, I like the Law and Orders.
SVUs or any of those?
Yeah, I would say I'm a Law and Order guy.
My sister is addicted to that show. She loved it. And I've seen a few episodes. It was well acted, sort of well written, but I found them to be very choppy and horribly repetitive. I felt like every episode was the same. But
well, that's why I kind of like it, though. Because when it comes to regular TV, I'm almost always working. Whether it's writing, you know, ranking, whatever, doing what we have to do. So I need a show like that. Bad guy does something. Good guys go get him. Bad guy go away. You know, so it's easy. I don't have to pay attention to it. You know, when you sit down and actually look at it. You know, you watch Game of Thrones, I need to sit there with a pad, pencil, my cheat sheet and figure out what the hell's going on here. I don't need to do it for most of these, you know, the crime shows. Like I said, bad guy does something, good guy go get him, bad guy go away. You know, so it's easy.
That's funny. It's probably why I don't watch as much TV now as I used to, because obviously I find myself to be working a lot more. I'm just reading articles and this kind of stuff. I'm not particularly good at doing that and working at the same and watching at the same time. So I can have a little bit of sports on the back in the background and turn the volume down and maybe watch it a little bit that way. But I do find myself end up getting distracted. So difficult for me to kind of do both at the same time. I wouldn't call myself the best of multitaskers when it comes to stuff like that. So it's probably why I watch a little bit of less TVs and movies.
Well, maybe it's telling you how just how bad TV is nowadays that I can do without ease. You know, most shows, I don't think this TV's all that great. I mean, the new 24, okay, it's 24, but and I was a huge fan of Jack Bauer, but, you know, the new ones, it's all right, but it's like any other show now. You know, I don't feel great about it. Walking Dead's still solid. Looking forward to watching that tonight. I look forward to Game of Thrones when it comes back. You know, maybe Suits on USA, I think, is a decent show. Or even that. I find most shows nowadays, they're actually doing the opposite, where everybody's bad now. You know, like I guess once they're just changing things. All the players are bad. So like when the Shield started, remember the Shield with Michael Chiklis, which was a fantastic show.
I know it. I know you love it.
That was one of the best shows I think ever made. You know, Sons of Anarchy, same thing. They're all bad. You know, so I think that's the new thing now. I guess because they need different ideas. So they're looking at from
like
the bad guy's point of view.
Like the main character is the
bad,
sort of
they're
the
bad
antagonist.
Guys. Yeah, right. Yeah. They're not good people. There was no one to root for in Sons of Anarchy. They were all bad. We're all doing different levels of crime. Some guys just worse than others. But it was very well written. It was a good show. It was fun to watch.
Pete, I may or may not have asked you this before, but what is like your favorite TV shows of all time?
House. I liked How I Met Your Mother. And I really
hated that show. I hated that show. I really did.
I liked
Psych. I'm not gonna lie. My wife tried to get me to watch How I Met Your Mother, and I found the main character to be so boring that I couldn't follow along. I just couldn't do it.
It was one of those shows that you had to kind of watch a season before it kind of started going.
Well, Jason Segel is a character on that show.
Yes.
He's really funny in all of his movies, and I thought they gave him terribly cheesy jokes all throughout that sitcom, and it drove me nuts. The guy writes and directs and acts and stars in great comedic movies, and he's on this sitcom with terrible, like, just puns and bad jokes. I just hated it.
Ah, well, hey, listen, it's your opinion. I agree with you. The writing was not spot on when it came to the characters, but I still enjoyed the show.
Yeah, sorry to tear apart your favorite sitcom.
No, it's okay. And by the way, the Daytona 500 is today. I was thinking it was, like, next week, so I messed that up. Yeah. It's today at 2.
So there you go.
Yeah.
So I'm not a big NASCAR guy. I haven't been tracking it. I'm more
obviously
kind of
none of us is. We didn't know Daytona 500 was today.
Yeah, it's the biggest race by a country mile, and we didn't know it was today. But in any event, I get kind of wrapped up in college basketball this time of year, in addition to all the MLB and NFL and NBA stuff that we follow on a regular basis. I will say that moving forward, we'll do a little more in terms of NBA. I'll make sure that every Saturday and Sunday, now that we're through the All-Star break, we have somebody on talking DFS. As the season really is not too much time left. You're really only looking about 6-7 weeks left of the NBA season. But in any event, back to the schedule of the day. The producers with Pete, Chris, and Don, maybe Don Burns, although probably it's next week. That will be on from, what is that, 1 to 3?
Yes.
Pete, 1 to 3. And Corey Parson with the Fantasy Football Frenzy, a replay from Thursday, Fantasy Basketball Weekly, which is on yesterday. You hear a replay of that. The Weekend Fantasy Update with Galena, Florio, and Stamfel. The Fantasy Basketball Weekly is Florio and Stamfel. Out of Bounds with Mike Cardano and friends. They had some interesting topics this week. Then the Fantasy Footballers will replay later tonight with Andy Holloway, Mike Wright, and Jason Moore, Fantasy Bagels and Baseball, and then us replaying late at night and through the night. So,
do you think Chacha does inappropriate things with his bagels?
I think Chacha is a host of inappropriate actions and language. And it doesn't make him a bad guy. I'm just saying that. I don't think he draws a lot of lines in the sand. You know what I mean? As far as actions and language is concerned. Is that fair to say?
Oh, that's very fair to say.
Yeah.
Chacha does not have a filter whatsoever.
That's right.
Funny as hell.
He
doesn't have a filter whatsoever.
Yeah, that's right. So, all right, we'll be back in a couple of minutes. George and I will continue to talk about whatever it is we feel like talking about. Bagels, cha-cha, NFL salary cap. We'll be back after this. Welcome back to the Roto Experts in the Morning. Continuing to go through the world of sports, fantasy implications, and other items as well. You know, George, going back to that salary cap talk that we had earlier, it really is kind of shocking. I guess none of it should be at this point because we see the proliferation of television rights and how much the leagues are getting paid and how much money is flowing into the league. But prior to 2013, the salary cap hadn't increased by more than $10 million since between the 97 and 98 seasons, when it jumped from $41.5 million to $52.4 million. And following the uncapped year of 2010, the 2011 cap actually fell from its previous mark, about $9 million. Now, as we see, these last few years, the salary cap has jumped from 2013, when it was 123, another $10 million to 2014 to 133, another $10 million in 2015 to 143, another $12 million to 2016 to 155, and now we're talking about likely another $13 million jump. So this thing is jumping hand over fist each and every year. We still obviously dedicate a big portion of that to some few players, especially at the QB position, but kind of crazy how it is jumping up year over year, and there's going to be more money to go around. Like what we've seen in the NBA, there's such an embarrassment of riches in the NBA that players that aren't really, quote, seemingly deserving, and I put that in air quotes because I don't use the word deserve like that. You get paid what the market tells you get paid. That's what you deserve. You know what I mean? But we see perhaps players that we didn't think to be eight-figure-a-year players getting that in the NBA. And we may very well see that coming in the NFL.
Well, that's why people get all upset when they hear about Kirk Cousins and that he might make more guaranteed money than Andrew Luck. There's no might. He will. It's not, yeah. It's not a matter how good you are. It's are you good enough at the position, and when do you become a free agent? And right now, Cousins holds all the cards. You know, he's going to make $24 million guaranteed. So any contract starts minimum $24 guaranteed, and it's going to be much higher than that. You know, so it's just the way it is. You're playing the market. Now, that's what the market's saying. If the Redskins don't want to pay him, somebody else will. That's a guarantee in today's NFL. If the Redskins don't want to do it, they can trade him. They could actually move him and probably get a decent return. San Fran will be the team they should be talking to, you know, if they don't believe in him. I don't blame him for not believing in him. I wouldn't want to pay him that kind of money either. You know, I think it's a huge gamble for someone is not an Andrew Luck type, but he's better than what they've had in forever, and he's better than average. You know, so and that's going to get paid in today's NFL.
Yeah, it's you know, you're going to see teams obviously shifting a lot of players around. We talked a bunch about the Chiefs yesterday. The Chiefs are in like the most interesting spot, as you mentioned yesterday. The signing of C.J. Spiller probably means that Jamal Charles is out the door. Nick Foles will clear $7 million off the cap. Can they tag Dontari Poe and keep Eric Berry? There are some creative ways, and I was listening to, I believe it was Jim Trotter of ESPN, explain a way in which they can do it. Because, George, when you and I were talking yesterday, I was like, I don't even see how this can get done. It seems like a choice between one or the other. But the Cardinals did something pretty interesting with Tyrann Mathieu, where it wasn't a big upfront salary in that year one. They did guarantee a bunch of the salary, but spread it out over the life of the deal. And his salary cap hit in the first year was only about $5 to $6 million, which is really what they would need to do in order to come in where they need to on Berry. So I would find it shocking if Berry is a guy that's on the market. At some point, I would think it's got to be a top priority for the Chiefs at this point, especially if they're moving on from a player like Jamal Charles. I think they're obviously making moves to try to keep Berry and Poe, but I would think they would prioritize Berry over Poe. That's just my opinion. He's a three-time All-Pro.
You know, I'll say this again. If a team wants to keep a player, they can. All right, you can always manipulate the cap. You know, the question is, do you want to do that? That's really the question. The question is not about whether or not you want to keep the player. Do you want to manipulate the cap? Because sooner or later, that price is going to come due. You know, that bill is coming in, whether it's 3 years. You look at the Cowboys or Tony Romo. It's what they're facing now. You know, same situation. The question is not whether or not you could trade Romo. You can certainly trade him, but you may be better off releasing him for cap purposes. You know, if you trade him, you know, that cap really is still the cap hit is still on your cap for this season. You release him, you can spread out over two seasons, especially if you do it as a post June cut. So that's really the game they're playing here with Kansas City. If they want to sign Poe and Berry, you know, franchise one, sign the other, it can be done. But they'll pay that bill eventually. You know, it's 2 years down the line, 3 years down the line, and it may stop you from being in the free agent market this season, maybe even next. So it really comes down to the organizational philosophy. Not all teams like to do what the Cowboys, you know, the Niners have done, you know, the Redskins have done, where you're just pushing it off into the future. You know, so it really comes down to team philosophy there. But I said I won't feel bad if they can't, you know, because they will have decided not to for whatever reason. Maybe they don't think, I think they signed Berry as well, by the way. Or maybe they decide Poe's not worth it. You know, he's not that kind of player, a true game changer where he's worth changing their organizational philosophy for as far as the cap is concerned, to push that bill for into the future. And I'll understand that. That won't bother me at all. If that's what you believe, then that's what you should follow.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, we, as we're going to continue to talk about free agency, it's going to get pretty heated here in the next couple of weeks. Obviously, the Combine starts on Tuesday. It's going to be a big manner in which the NFL teams are doing business. Not only are they evaluating prospects, there's going to be meetings all over Indianapolis with free agents and free agents with their agents and the team executives. A lot of discussions will be had in Indianapolis. Trade talks, if necessary, will come up there as well. Certainly, we may not see those trades come to fruition until the draft in May, but so be it. Right now, I'm looking at a list of the top 25. 2017 unrestricted free agents. Number one on the list is Le'Veon Bell. What's interesting is that number two on the list is Eric Berry. You and I sit here each and every week and we talk about Eric Berry. What are they going to do and how are they going to fit him in, or are they going to tag him again? It's kind of crazy because you hear far less drama about the Le'Veon Bell situation, right? It's either he's either going to play for the tag or we're going to sign him long term. He's not going anywhere. That's the end of this discussion, correct?
Well, the difference is Pittsburgh only has one star that's up. KC has two.
Right.
So that's the difference there. So, yeah, Bell's not going anywhere.
Yeah. And we talk about Cousins and all that kind of drama every week. Alshon Jeffrey we've talked about quite a bit. Chandler Jones, an unrestricted free agent. I haven't heard too much there. He was traded, obviously, in Arizona this year. You know, he can kind of thrive in any system. Bruce Arians has already declared they're going to retain him with the franchise tag if they can't sign him long-term. So it's almost a similar situation to Le'Veon Bell. He's not going anywhere. It's just a matter of how they end up keeping him. A lot of the same names we already talked about, frankly, on this list, they have Jamie Collins listed as a number 11 out of the top 25 free agents. We already know he inked a deal, a four-year deal for $50 million, $26 million in guarantees. I mean, I don't know that we talked about this much, George. I think smart for them to keep him. Some people might say, well, why are you investing in this player when there's so many moving parts around him? Did you need to dedicate that to a linebacker? I think yes. He's a game-changing type of player. Hopefully he doesn't freelance in the way that some people suggested he did. You know, the funny thing, Gary Davenport is obviously a guest on our program pretty regularly during the football season. He said, you know, 2 days, this is right when the trade happened. He's like, you know, 48 hours ago, Jamie Collins was a top five linebacker in football. And in reading my Twitter feed today, he seems like garbage because he freelances too much. So I thought that was odd that it seemed like there was work being done by a lot of people to bash Jamie Collins.
That's the way it's done. You know, it's the PR people getting into the motion of why he was released, why he was traded, why he was unceremoniously dumped. You know, and we see this over and over again. It's why a lot of this, you have to learn to read through this. You know, read through the crap, read through the garbage. Teams are putting stuff out there. You know, the Browns are why they want him so much. The Patriots will be why they got rid of him, because he wasn't doing this, wasn't doing that. I mean, if you're a scout, you're watching the film. That pretty much tells you everything you need to know about his play on the field. Locker room stuff, that can be tougher to come by. You know, what his problem was with Bill Belichick, don't know. Maybe he didn't follow the Patriots' way. Maybe, he had some problems with some of the superstars on the team. Who knows? Either way, I guess they made $50 million. I don't think I can feel bad for the guy.
No, I think he's doing okay. So George and I gone around the sports world talking about all the fantasy implications. We'll get back to a little bit of baseball in the third hour. Might do a little bit more football, but I think we've kind of exhausted whatever stories are out there for the week. It's about the slowest week here in the NFL, but we're leading into the combine. I know, George, you don't get too excited about the combine, but is there any player you're looking to keep your eye on, or you want to see how this quarterback thing flushes out?
No, don't care about the combine at all. Once again, it's all set up for them to do well. The pro days, same thing. You know, I guess you're more curious about guys who bomb in the combine.
Yeah. So George and I will be back after the break with the third hour of the Roto Experts in the Morning on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.